actually the ideal is that like Monday night you have dinner at this, you know, these people's house. It's like a rotating dinner, and you know, you have like weekend parties, and you have kind of like a built-in like childcare system, friend system. Like, you know, this night is the night where we all get together and talk about, we have a book club, you know, like I think really what I'm describing is a cult, I think. So,
yeah.
But I think like a kind of like a closer knit neighborhood is maybe my ideal.
Welcome back to I'm the Villain. Today we are back after a somewhat long hiatus because both Deandre just got married. And so, yeah. we were both kind of preoccupied for the last like month and a half. Yeah.
This is my first podcast as a married man.
Yeah. yeah, we have to do an episode about that. But we are here today with Mike and Stephanie, who are, Mike is a friend from college, and Stephanie is Mike's partner. And this past month, they hosted a summer camp, which was like an adult summer camp thing that I attended. And I thought it was super cool and a really, really awesome reflection of like how to build a community. So I wanted to invite them on the show to talk about that. So would both of you give the audience just a brief introduction as to just who you are, anything they need to know about you?
My name's Stephanie Logan. I grew up in Eastern Washington State and moved to DC right after college. I grew up in a really small town, very tight-knit community, the kind of high school where everybody knew each other. I went to this, you know, grew up with the same kids I went to elementary school, I graduated high school with, and then moved to DC, which to me is a very big city. It feels smaller now that I've been here for the last almost 9 years, but definitely kind of a small town kid at heart.
And I'm Mike Wheeler. I also grew up in a small town, though it wasn't quite as community oriented, kind of just like out in the woods, but have always had like a tight knit community of friends and family. Went to a weird charter school where you knew everybody. It was really, really tiny from 7 through 12, and then chose tiny college, was an RA, like have been a camp counselor, you know, led cycling trips for kids, just have done a lot of stuff in tight-knit groups. Yeah, and now I'm in DC.
When you said tiny college, it made it sound like it was a college that was called tiny college.
Yeah, it's very prestigious, actually. Yeah, you probably haven't heard of it.
Wait, where did you actually, like, what state did you grow up in, Mike?
Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, I grew up in Connecticut, so I a lot of people have a lot of nostalgia, I think, for like the place that they grew up, but I really do not feel it in any way.
Yeah, going back to where I grew up, it's like, man, it's so beautiful and it's out in the woods, but I do not miss the culture. I do not miss the kinds of people who live there. It's like there have been some weird, ugly things that have happened in that area since I've left. Like,
are you from Western Mass?
It's Central Mass. I'm like right up near New Hampshire, but like kind of halfway over. So
got it. One of my partners is from Western Mass, so I've like gotten a little exposure to that area.
Yeah, a lot of people are always like, "Oh, Connecticut, was your town like Gilmore Girls?" And I was like, no, it's like not like that at all.
Being from the West Coast, like, I think the Connecticut has a kind of like vibe about it that I assume, and every single person I've met from Connecticut is like, ugh, Connecticut, which is so wild exactly. To me as just someone from the West Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, when I was growing up there was really not like a ton of this community feeling. And so, Stephanie, I really would love to like hear you kind of talk a little bit more about like, you know, the community that you were describing to us when, you know, when you were talking to us at camp.
Yeah. So I grew up, I have a very large family. I have four siblings and lived with both my parents in, you know, kind of a small town. So it's not rural, but there are about 30,000 people in a college town in Washington State. And so I had a large family, and then we also lived in a cul-de-sac with four or five different families that all had kids our age. And so from a very young age, I mean, since I was born, I had neighborhood like friends and parents, and it was like we would just kind of wander over to other people's houses, and they would take care of us or they would feed us, and we would spend all of our summers out in the cul-de-sac riding bikes and playing games. And it was like really idyllic, as when you think about, like, you know, having kind of free range as a child. And then in addition to our kind of neighborhood community, we also had, I grew up going to church. And that was a group that was obviously like multi-generational. It was a place that we all gathered. And I think the thing that I look back on now as an adult is the importance of having like people that took care of each other. And my mom was really a big part of that. Like, I grew up watching my mom essentially, like, she had like a finger to the pulse of what everybody needed. And then she would either, you know, give from what she could give, or she would organize people around her to take care of people in the community. And so that's the kind of like environment I grew up in. I also went to college in the same town I grew up in. I played volleyball. And so I had a like a very strong community around that through college. And then when I moved to DC, that all went out the window. And it has taken me quite a long time to realize that's an important part of my life. And that's something I want to build. And that's the kind of community that I want to have, is the kind of community where, you know, you kind of are surrounded by people who you know and who care about you, and you care about them, and you can kind of give to each other in a way that, you know, isn't like necessarily, it's not draining for anyone, because at some point you're giving and you're receiving, mm-hmm. depending on what your needs are at the time.
When you were like in the moment living in that community, did you feel like, wow, this is sick, like we're really all connected? Or were you like, it's a little annoying that everyone's in my business, or it was just like your life and you weren't really thinking about it?
I think some of the last and some of the second. So I think, especially in my teenage years, it was mostly annoying to me that everybody knew who I was, and nobody, you know, nobody would leave me alone. But I think, I just didn't really notice it a lot. I think it was just kind of like, this is the way things are, and this is how people live their life. I had no idea what it was like to be kind of like unmoored from a community, because it was just the way that everything always was. So it was a little bit of annoyance, but mostly just kind of like not realizing until you don't appreciate what you have until it's gone, basically.
Mm-hmm. DeAndre, I really, cause like you had this exact same, like really explicit, like rhetoric at your yes. wedding, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
We really wanted to do a wedding that like was powered by and like celebrated our collective community. So that was like, that was a nice buzzword that we used a lot. But there are some ways that like, I don't know, there are some ways that we really kind of saw it to come together. Obviously, like, you know, people helped us like set up, which was a big deal. But like, I remember being moved by when like it was time to eat dinner. We had always known that like we were gonna maybe like ask some people to help like bring out food to tables, but that actually ended up like not really happening, and people just kind of like volunteered and to bring food to tables. And then like when people saw that it was time to clear a certain dish, like clear the charcuterie off the table, other people just started doing that and joining in. And you know, it was very like I was moved by how like organically people were like, oh, okay, it's time to clear the table so the next course can come out. And like, oh, maybe the caterers need some help bringing the next course out. And then again, like at the end of the night, you know, it was, there's like a small contingent of people that whose job it was, like our bridal parties, to help clean up and like just start stacking chairs and things like that. And once again, like people saw that was happening, and all of a sudden, like the entire wedding was like, you know, the remaining like 50 or 40 people that were there was just like 40 or 50 drunk people, like going and getting chairs and stacking them up. And, you know, like by the end of the wedding or by the end of the night, like so much of that work, we were much farther along than we had ever anticipated being. And we thought we were going to have to come back the next day. So like, clear the remaining stuff, and that actually didn't have to happen, which was in large part because people just like decided they were gonna help, which is really sick. We did like a group vow where people stood, and like, you know, it was like, yeah, it was, the whole thing was that we always wanted it to be like by us and our friends and our family, like for our us and our friends and our family. And yeah, it felt good. I felt like we succeeded.
That sounds really amazing. And I will say, I think one of the really cool things about like that kind of like caring behavior is that one of the things I've noticed is that even my friends who didn't kind of grow up with that inclination, it's like a practiced response. And when you see, I think really when you see it in action, because I do have some friends that are a little bit more skeptical of the idea that like you would spend your time doing stuff that's unpleasant to you know, give to other people. But I think when you see how much of a difference it can make for people and you practice it a few times, you start to really understand how valuable it is to people that you are giving to, and also that you might receive that kind of care too.
Yeah. So true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were, I remember like one of the things, that we did at, the camp was like, we had this like initial bonfire where people were like, you know, doing sort of 20 questions to people at the beginning. And one of your friends, I don't remember who it was, what said in response to like, you know, oh, like what is, you know, like an important question you've been thinking about was, can you have community without ideology? And I was like so curious as to whether you guys had actually had that conversation, because then we never actually like talked about that at all. But I was like, that would have been such an interesting thread to like, you know, continue on. And like, that was just a really, that really sparked a lot of thoughts for me. Cause I was like, I don't know if you can.
Great question. Yeah. I mean, I think it depends like what counts as ideology. Stephanie and I felt very strongly that we needed to give people not only like opportunities explicitly to buy into the idea of camp, and that a lot of these things sort of take on faith, that a lot of these things were just inherently valuable to the people around you, even if like a given action, it wasn't clear, you know, who was benefiting, or if it was like worth your time, or if you would have had more fun doing something else. But that just like, generally speaking, this thing only works because all of us are willing to contribute on faith. So I don't know if that counts exactly as ideology, but it was something we really wanted to like infuse. And I think maybe the bigger picture there is that there is going to be sacrifice and inconvenience. And even in a camp setting, that sounds kind of absurd for 2 days where it's like a lot of the food is made for you. But we wanted to make it clear up front between like the chores and other stuff that giving was going to be a part of this. And in a lot of ways, we were trying to like kind of Trojan horse people, like trick them into realizing like that would enhance their own experience of it. And in the end, maybe a lot like what DeAndre was saying, like people wanted that opportunity for the most part. I don't think there was anybody who really resisted. And at so many points, people went out of their way to sacrifice a little bit or to give a little bit, even if they weren't really sure like who they were giving to or why or what. So I don't know, Stephanie, what other ideology was there?
Actually, that question is something I think we talked about on the way home. And I do think that you have to have some collective understanding of what your values as a group are. But I don't know whether that's, I agree with Michael. It's like, I don't know whether that's an ideology or whether that's something else. But I think you have to have some kind of, we agree that these things are important to us as a group. I don't think it necessarily has to be any type of like, you know, worship or any type of, like, you know, it doesn't have to be kind of ideology in a religious type of setting. I think it can be a, you know, the things that are important to us are kindness and generosity and caring. But I don't know. I don't know if that's enough to sustain the kind of group effort in a community.
Yeah, because I feel I didn't have any kind of religious community when I was growing up. My parents are like a pretty like anti-religion in a lot of ways. And like now as an adult, when I look, I have a friend who like went to Harvard Divinity School and they have a project there where they are kind of studying, okay, as the country is secularizing, what are the proxies that are providing those same sort of like community, like core, you know, principles to people in the ways that, you know, institutional religion isn't doing anymore. And so like a lot of what they look at is things like sports teams or like, you know, things like, you know, the impromptu things that come up, like, you know, like camp or like something like a wedding. Like these are exactly the kinds of things, right, that are kind of like now providing that stand-in for this like very like something that has been very core to many Americans' lives in terms of how they structure their social lives, you know, like in American history. And it's just sort of like, I when I think about that for like the communities that I have, like I'm part of a Frisbee community here in Philadelphia, which is like actually super robust. It's much stronger than a lot of the Frisbee communities that I've been a part of in other cities. But it's not like I'm going to go to those people on my Frisbee team for like, if I have a death in the family and they're like, you know, they're not going to start a meal train. It's like not, and I'm sort of like, how do you get, I feel like the whole, my whole sort of like adult life, I've been like, you know, super, it's like, you know how like sometimes you like, there is this phenomenon where you like you encounter someone else's family and you're like, oh wow, I'm so jealous of your family, like this is so awesome that you guys are actually close with each other. Like I feel that, but around religious communities, because like, you know, it feels like so much of the various communities that I'm a part of feel like a very weak facsimile of what that kind of community can be, right?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about that. So the community that I most, maybe not idolized, but like learned what community was from was the Alcoholics Anonymous community, which I'm not a part of directly, but my parents were both very actively involved in. They were both alcoholics and then, you know, went to AA and that really kind of changed their lives. And there are some really important foundations there that I think we used in camp in some ways. And one of them, when we talk about sacrifice, there, like, it sounds nebulous, but there are actually some pretty specific things that did and didn't happen because of that. For example, there were people who were interested in coming and we could have made exceptions for about like, oh, well, you don't have to do chores because you really don't want to, you know, or something like that. But in the end, we actually decided to not accommodate them specifically. And this is related back to AA. So a big part of AA is that if you want to be there, you have to participate in some way often. I mean, it depends where you are, but the expectation is that you don't just sit and listen and kind of take what you want, but you have to be willing to help out. And there are some things, it's like, just can you make the coffee at a given meeting? Or, you know, can you share your story? Will you talk to people honestly? And then, you know, a lot of the goal is to help another person become sober. And not like to proselytize, but like to make yourself available and to put in the effort to do that. But anyway, that's just back to that like sacrifice, and that in some ways, the AA community, though it's meant to really serve people, it's like to be here, you have to be willing to buy in and commit certain actions and sacrifice. And if you are not willing to do that, then you cannot be a part of the group. And like, it was a weird thing for us to put in place, like a hard line like that. But there are people who we know and love who did not come to camp because we were unwilling to accommodate them, with the idea being we would be strengthening our community, you know, because we've seen it work in other places where there is that like hard line.
That's so interesting. Cause like, yeah. Yeah, like I think that the rules basically piece of like, you know, having a community is like the hardest part to like figure out how to navigate.
Right. Because often right? They're unwritten. Because like, in like it's an actual, so, in an actual, yeah, like, you know, real world setting, like there aren't written rules. They're just like things that you do.
And we live in such an individual society that people like, I feel like very, very often, especially I think more so as an adult than like, when you're a kid, like at camp, like you just like, yeah, I'll do the thing. Like, you know, I'm a kid. I listen to, like, that's like what you do. But like, yeah, as an adult, I feel like it is so much harder to like convince people to really sacrifice for something because it's something that we like don't, you know, like it's sort of like considered almost like one of the perks of adulthood is that like you don't have to do those kinds of things. You can like do whatever you want, basically.
Yeah.
Right? And it kind of sucks.
Yeah. And relatedly, one of the things that there was a back and forth on some of these. And one of the things that came up with multiple people was, well, we'll pay for it. Like we'll pay people to do the chores. We'll pay for a cleaner to come. And it's like, no, that's not the point. We don't want the money. We want the participation. Like, you know, you can't buy what we're asking you to provide. So yeah, but I think that does come with that freedom of adulthood is like, right. I have money, I have power, I have agency, right. I have choice. And we're restricting that.
And part of it too was like, you know, we certainly could have planned, we could have said we are going to go do a weekend at a resort. And that's a different, it's like kind of the same idea, but it's not the same outcome, right? Like the idea of going somewhere where you're taken care of, or we're going to go to a hotel, or we're going to go do this like retreat. That's not the same idea as camp. And part of it I felt was Michael and I are doing all of this for you, right? And like, and we want to be part of that. We want to be part of this experience. And part of that was like, everybody that is coming gets to give back to us in some way. And, you know, we did all this organizing and planning, and it wasn't just so we could get the benefit of it, but because we wanted to feel closer to people and not just give people like have a good fun time. Like we do that all the time. We love to go out and like hang out with people and spend our money to be taken care of. But like the purpose of camp was really like, we made a very conscious decision not to even look into someone to come clean the camp after we were done. Because we did have a choice there and we chose to try to, do something slightly different. I also wanted to go back to something you were saying, Isabel, about not being able to necessarily ask your Frisbee community for like if there was a death in your family. And Michael and I, one of the things that we share is that we are not very good at asking for help. Mm-hmm. And we both are, I think we both look for opportunities to kind of like make people feel appreciated and cared for. And so oftentimes we are kind of going out of our way to do that for other people. And that's like an important part of community. But I think the hard part that we are trying to help each other learn is the opposite side of that, which is asking for what you want out of your community and being honest about the kind of relationship that you want to have with someone. That has been really, really hard for me to do. But I think it's because we've been able to do it together, I think we've been able to really strengthen a lot of our relationships with existing friends to say like, I want this kind of thing from you. I'm willing to give this to you and I want to have this kind of relationship. And honestly, it has not always worked out. Like not every friendship is going to be like that. And not every person wants to be in that kind of relationship. And it's really helped me figure out who are the kind of people that I can have that kind of relationship with and really like invest in those relationships too.
Yeah. I think not every relationship is built for it, right? Like, it's like every relationship can't be that. So there's like some, you know, like there's some capacity that you like, can you have like a full community with not room to like, I don't know, give to more people, but maybe it should be, maybe that's like not a thing. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, I mean, I think that like the thing that is so like, you know, I feel like people often talk about like, oh yeah, building community is hard, but I think yeah, like there's so many different ways in which it's hard. Like obviously like you have the literal like someone has to sit down and like plan out logistics for things, but like I feel like the part that is most hard for me is just the interpersonal, like, you know, having to risk, you know, people are very conflict averse, right? But like there's also like as an adult, I feel like the older my peers get, I feel like the less sort of like tolerant of discomfort, for example, people are. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Like, you know, I was like really, really excited for this camp because I was a camp kid. And so like, but there were definitely people who were like, oh man, like, you know, who like, you know, got to like see the bunks and they're like, oh, like this is not like up to the level of comfort that I am like, you know, used to. And like, that I feel like is something that is like as you get older is like harder and harder to grapple with, right? Because people just like really want to be comfortable.
Be comfortable is sick.
You know? Yes. But it honestly reminds me of DeAndre. Like so on a previous episode of this podcast, we were talking with DeAndre's friend Kenny, who had an episode on being gay in the South. And obviously he was bringing up like, you know, it would be so awesome. Like he was like, the first time I went to New York and saw the gay community in New York, it was like this, you know, super like breath of fresh air. It was amazing. And there's obviously this strong temptation to just move to New York. Right. And he was like, but I see it as sort of this like moral responsibility of mine to do the work of building like a gay community in the South, because someone already did all of that hard work in New York. But like, you can't, like, it, to him, he was like, you can't just flee like the places where it's hard to go to the places where it's easy. Like, you have to really, like, it is a slog.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's my experience of this. I have, I think, successfully pushed, especially when I've been, you know, NRA, or like there's a bit of a role difference or age difference, you know, in that relationship. It's not totally equal. Like, I feel like a part of my job is to push people out of their comfort zone. And I think people have to learn, and I'm amazed that this friend had that perspective, because I think some people, it goes one of two ways. You know, it's like either they go outside their comfort zone and they get punished really badly, and it's like, oh my gosh, that was horrible, like not worth it, don't want to do it again, I just want to go where I feel safe and comfortable. And like, I 100% get that, because you had a bad experience. No, not at all. Like that's the feedback loop, right? It's like, I tried this thing and it went really badly and I shouldn't do it again, you know? But if people are invited outside or pushed outside that comfort zone in a way that is rewarding, or maybe on the other side of it, there's connection. Like, I hope people found at camp where it's like, okay, we, you know, we slept in a bunk that was maybe not super comfortable. There were some big spiders, like, okay, not ideal, obviously. But I hope they left thinking, I'm really glad I did that. And some of that discomfort was worth it. And then that helps them go a little bit further. But yeah, it's harder with adults, I think, because they're like, people really calcify, and they, I think, maybe aren't in the way that like school or certain early jobs like push you to experience things that you wouldn't choose. Like they're much more capable of just choosing what they know. Right. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, and it's interesting related to that comfort, because actually Stephanie and I have already started thinking we want to try to move to, in the same park, the newest camp. We were in the oldest camp just to increase some of the sleeping comfort. So I guess, yeah, I mean, we're trying to figure out like, where are the trade-offs,
middle ground somewhere
there, right? it's like,
because you don't want to lean too much into the and being, like, just being uncomfortable just for the purpose of being uncomfortable, character building kind of thing.
Exactly. Right, because we figure like a lot of the discomfort that we want people to experience that we think is really worthy is like social discomfort, that like giving back in a practical way to the community. And like, you know, the sleeping situation is not really intentionally part of the discomfort, so we're willing to like alleviate that a little bit. But I'm with you.
Can we take a step back and just talk about, like, first of all, we haven't said the name of the camp, so we should do that. And then I would love for you all to just talk about like the inception, what made you want to do it, like where this whole situation came from.
Yeah. So the camp is called Camp Logwheel, which was basically kind of like a panic. It was the only name we came up with, and it's a combination of our last name, so Logan and Wheeler. And it was like, it's not good, but it's like, it is a name. So for a while we were just calling it summer camp, because we're like, no, Logwheel sucks. That's like not a good name. But we ended up with Logwheel, which I think is actually fine. And I think it will endure. So it's camp, we called it Camp Logwheel. And the inception of it was, I've lived in the DC area for almost 9 years. And it's taken me almost this long to realize that in January, you have to start booking campgrounds for the summer, because this area is just so, like, the campgrounds fill up, basically. So every year, January, February, I start looking around to book some campgrounds. We stayed at a really amazing place out in West Virginia in July. It was beautiful. And while I was kind of doing some of this research, I was Googling kind of cabin camps because I have a lot of friends who want to have experience of camping but don't like tent camping. And I realized through by Googling that this camp that we had camp at, I had volunteered there as a for the Girl Scouts in the kitchen for like a weekend in the fall. And when I like the website came up, and I thought it was I thought it was the kind of place that you could only book if you were like a nonprofit or Girl Scout or Boy Scouts, you know, that kind of thing. And I realized that we could in fact just book it for whatever reason we want. And so I like went to Michael and I was like, do you think we should just do this? Should we just like have a camp? And that's how it was born. I don't know, Michael, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I mean, the maybe bigger background is from very early on when Stephanie and I met, we realized how we have very similar shared values around community and like bettering people's lives around us, and that like if there's a mission that we kind of share, it is like bringing people together. And that when we talk about the vision for family that we want, and you know, Isabel, you mentioned earlier meeting a family and going like, wow, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up with one of those families who actually now lives in DC, like a best friend's family. And Stephanie's gotten to be a part of that. And we go out of our way to try to structure gatherings all the time. You know, we have sort of the thing we call, it's just called monthly party, and it is a party we do monthly and just like invite different groups of people and try to get them to collaborate. And we do big celebrations for people's birthdays. So like, we're always thinking about how to do this and how to create more ties between our friends. And so I think because we'd already done some of that and we felt like the groundwork was laid and people were familiar enough that we would have like a core that might be willing to just like do this on faith, even if they're not really sure like if it would work or what the deal is. Mm-hmm.
So what was the like invitation process like? Did you like, was everyone at the camp connected to you all in your community in some way?
Yes. So that was one of the major things that when we were coming up with the construction, because we were asking something of people, we wanted to make sure that people understood us and weren't just coming because we were asking them to kind of sacrifice in some way. We wanted to make sure people understood kind of like who we were and what the purpose of this was. And so we limited the registration to our immediate friends and their friends. In the end, we got almost I think we had 45 people that were almost all our friends. We had a couple people who were once removed, but I think everyone we had met before, or it was like a partner of a friend. And so I think the leap of faith did not extend beyond our immediate connections, but we did want to limit the kind of registration to the people who were like 2 degrees of separation, because we didn't want to have a situation where you know, we had 150 people, which is the max amount of people we could have had. 150 people who were like, I don't really need to do my chore, it'll be fine. And then Michael and I have to like cook dinner, clean up, sweep the dining hall, make the fire, entertain people. We really didn't want that situation. And so we kind of limited the group for this one to that like smaller group of people.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the worst case scenario that we imagined, other than nobody wanting to come at all, was like, if you've been to a big house party and like people who just sort of like know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody come and they like drink a ton and trash the place and like, and just leave because they don't feel any connection. It's like that was what we were worried about as far as like those degrees of connection. We really wanted people to be willing to like buy into the vision there.
So yeah. I guess, would you guys, so like if you had, I feel like I have so many people who I have spoken with about the idea of like wanting to have basically like a church-like thing that doesn't have whatever the negative things that we associate with institutional religion. Like, what do you think your ideal, like if, like I feel like we all like do, like have this similar desire to like, you know, have sort of a more robust community structure than is currently like presented to us, right? And then obviously there's like, oh, then I have to go build it myself. This is so annoying. But like, what would that, like in your ideal world, like what does that look like to you?
Well, I should say I actually did pursue a church community
yeah
like at different points since I've lived in DC, And yeah. ultimately, like, it gave me, it kind of like scratched an itch, but I didn't actually want to be part of it. Even, I think because the actual like sitting in a pew, even though I went to like, Unitarian Church, which is kind of like,
yeah,
it's, yeah, it's just kind of like a come be part of this thing. It's not like they do have kind of particular ideology, but it's not as restrictive as like, I grew up Methodist. And I should say I'm not religious anymore. I don't really believe in any kind of, I don't have any spiritual practice, but I wanted that community. And so I kind of went and tried to sit in a church pew. And ultimately, like, I felt when I would go on Sunday morning, I felt just like this pit of anxiety and this like squirmy, like I wanted to leave. Like I did not want to actually sit in the pew and listen to a sermon or whatever it was, like whatever they were doing. I was like, this is not actually the thing I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. The thing I'm looking for is the kind of like potluck, multi-generational group of people who are gathering in some way. So it's not necessarily like a spiritual practice that I wanted. It was really the community. You had asked what was your question? Now I forgot.
Like sort of what is like,
what is the ideal?
You know, yeah, what does that ideal look like?
I mean, I think honestly for me, the ideal looks like the cul-de-sac that I grew up in, where you live next to you, to families or people who you are, like the adults are friends, you know, maybe you have kids that are the same age and you have dinner. I mean, actually the ideal is that like Monday night you have dinner at this, you know, these people's house too. It's like a rotating dinner and, you know, you have like weekend parties and you have kind of like a built-in like childcare system, friend system. Like, you know, this night is the night where we all get together and talk about, we have a book, you know, like I think really what I'm describing is a cult, I think. So,
yeah,
but I think like a kind of like a closer knit neighborhood is maybe my ideal.
Definitely related. I think one of the biggest things that has been lost, like, for me since college and then especially like I recently quit my job because I just couldn't deal with remote work anymore. And both of these is the same thing where it's like if you're not in physical proximity to people, you can't have spontaneous or incidental kind of connection. If you don't have really close like physical access to the people in your community,
yeah,
then everything has to be planned. And I think there's a cost to planning everything and reaching out and like trying to figure out like what's the reason for us interacting or what's the activity that we're going to do, as opposed to like you see the other person walking outside your door and you just kind of go walk with them and say hello. And in college, I mean, maybe my favorite community ever, I was an RA. Yeah. And like it was amazing. Like I was an RA and basically I bought some sofa chairs and bought a TV and set up my GameCube and just left my room unlocked at all hours of the day. And I would come back from class and there would be five or six of my residents and some of their friends in my room. And it'd be like, great, like here we all are. You know, and you see people on the path and in the dining hall and like, I don't know how achievable that is as adults, but I know some people, like a friend's parents who moved away from their community when they were in their 20s, and they invited a bunch of their closest friends to just come move out to where they were, and their friends did move. And so like, because I remember when I first learned about this, I was blown away and said like, what's the secret? And they said like, you have to ask.
You just got
to
ask.
Like, yeah, like nobody asks. Everybody's like, oh, I wish my friends lived near me. I wish I had people who did these things with me or live right next door. And it's like, nobody asks, you know? It feels inappropriate to want that or to like require that in some way. So anyway, I guess just like physical proximity for me is the biggest thing, so that you get that spontaneity and you get just the incidental, natural connection. You can walk over into a friend's house.
I think the other thing about this is that... I think part of this requires you to think a little bit beyond the traditional view of what a family should be. Like what we're describing is not like a nuclear family where we have a mom and a dad and two little kids, right? Like, and part of this is like an exercise in like, what kind of construction of family could we have? And when I think part of this conversation is, it's easier to have this conversation about what does community mean? What does it look like with people who are a little bit more open to the idea that, you know, like the nuclear family is not the end all.
Right.
And, you know, when we talk about like, maybe we do have a kind of like family that includes not just us, but like other couples that we have a similar kind of vision for what we want our community to look like, our neighborhood, and maybe we live next door. Maybe we make some kind of commitment that we'll do this together in some way. Like, there's different ways that we've been kind of talking about, like, how do we achieve this, this kind of community? I think it does require sacrifice. It requires intentionality. It requires vulnerability to ask for what you want, to be clear about what you want and ask for what you want. And it's, I think, a little bit scary, honestly, to decide that you want something that isn't kind of like, you know, as traditional. Even though I think we both know, like, that is what we both know that would bring us a lot of happiness and a lot of fulfillment. But, you know, it kind of requires you to take a leap that's a little bit beyond where we currently are.
Yeah. This is something we've talked about a lot on this show.
It's like everyone wants this. Like, it feels like almost everyone in my bubble wants this.
Right. Literally everyone wants this.
Yeah,
everyone
yeah.
talks about, like, everyone that, like, went to college.
It was so awesome.
About how, like,
yeah.
it was so sick to live right next to your friends. And, you know, I shared a very, like, similar experience in my college where, like, the residence hall I lived in was very communal. It was, like, a little bit different because it wasn't the typical, like, dorm suite situation. It was actually, like, NC State bought a motel that was right off on the outskirts of campus and converted that into a dorm. And so we lived, you know, it was like, it's like there's a breezeway with, like, rooms, and each room had two beds and its own bathroom. But there was, like, in between these buildings, there was, like, volleyball courts and situations. So it was very much like, yeah, like, during the warm months, I would, like, see people around the res hall, and I'd be like, you know, hey, are we playing volleyball tonight? And they were like, yeah, for sure. And then, like, you know, at some point in the afternoon, someone would come out with a volleyball, and over the course of the evening, more people would come out, and we would just, like, be playing games and hanging out and, like, you know, smoking hookah and being, like, generally debaucherous. but it's very organic, and it's like, I remember struggling when I first got to DC, because it, you know, my life was not going, or at least it was not like that anymore. And in this, you know, at least in, like, in that stage of my life, and, like, it's kind of continues to be this way. Maybe I'm just used to it. Like, it went from, like, you know, I had, like, a core group of, like, 5 to 7 friends, and it was, like, assumed that on any given day we were probably hanging out. Some permutation of us were hanging out with each other, to, like, a more kind of, like, young professional DC environment where, like, I needed to schedule time on people's calendars to be able to see them, right? It was like, I remember yeah. that transition being especially quite difficult for me. It's hard for me to, like, take a step back and figure out where I'm at now in terms of, like, do I have that, like, I think I still have to schedule time with people, but I do live in a house with, like, I live in a 5-person house, and we're all, like, really good friends. Truly feels like my family. So I feel like I'm, like, very fortunate and lucky in that way, and that, like, that, like, really shapes a lot of my day-to-day life in DC.
yeah it's interesting, the group house thing. Like, I, you know, I had lived in a dorm, but when I got to DC, I just kind of, like, found the cheapest thing, and it was a group house, and I learned that it was very common in DC, and I actually think it's one of the only things that happens here that really promotes community naturally, like that spontaneous community. And I mean, I've sort of, like, even at a point where I was making enough money to live by myself, I chose to live in a group house just for that reason. And interestingly, a lot of the other people there, you know, I lived with, like, a doctor in his late 30s, same thing. Like, he has way more than enough money to buy his own big house. And I actually had an experience in DC once that really kind of brought it home for me and made me a little sad, like, happy in the moment, but also kind of sad. It's maybe, like, 2 or 3 years ago. There's a big snow, maybe not storm, but just, like, snowfall. And there was a guy, like, an older guy out in front of his house, and this big tree limb had fallen and he was trying to like find some way of moving it. And so I started helping. And then like maybe three other guys who were out walking started helping. We were just chatting with each other and kind of, you know, joking, like just not about anything in particular, but communicating with these strangers and like all participating in this little collective event, and then help the guy like sweep it all up after he moved the tree limb out of the way. And like kind of said goodnight. And I was like, wow, that's the only time in 7 years here that that has ever happened. Yeah. And that's really sad, because clearly all it took, it was one little obstruction. All of a sudden, we're all like willing to talk to each other and be really friendly and nice and neighborly. Yeah. And like, it never happens otherwise. You know, we just ignore each other. So
I will say one of the things that Michael and I have talked about. So we live together now in Alexandria, and, you know, we talked about, well, you know, there's nothing stopping us from, like, we live in a condo. And so there's nothing stopping us from setting up a little table of food, and anyone who walks by, or putting in the little condo Facebook group, like, hey, we're going to like hang out, we're going to grill, like come hang, you know, come, we'd love to meet our neighbors. We've never done it, because that requires us to know our neighbors.
Right.
And that is a kind of sacrifice that we right at this moment don't really want to make. And so it is kind of like, you know, we have all these like ideas of like a perfect neighborhood where everybody loves each other and everybody knows each other and everyone's taking care of each other. We have an opportunity to do that. But the risk, like, I think you run the risk of, well, what if you don't like your neighbors, or what if they're nosy? Yeah. And that's the kind of environment I grew up in. And so I think, you know, we are actively choosing right now not to do that. And so I don't really know, you know, we have all these ideas of what would be perfect and we could build that. But I do think like all of this, everything we're talking about requires you to give something up, which maybe is your anonymity or your privacy or anything like that. And so right at this moment, I don't think we're willing to do that, because we have the extra time to go drive and see our friends who live in other neighborhoods. And I don't know, maybe that will change, or maybe we'll choose to live somewhere where we already know people, but it is true that we already are making a choice that is not kind of what we've described as our ideal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting, because community can look like so many different things. And I think that's what that is a testament to, like, and yeah, like that trade-off is so real, right? It's like, sometimes you just want to walk down the street, right? And you don't, like, maybe you don't want every single person to know who you are, but it's hard to have that in between.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like you're chasing that high of college for like the rest of your life,
right? You know? Yeah, that's
you're
really
just like, is this literally just like, you know, the best it's gonna be? And like, I think that like, I feel like, I think about like, what are the obstacles of this happening, right? I think that money, despite the fact that money does enable you to do a lot of things, I think that like money is honestly one of the barriers, right, to making it happen, you know? Because like you said, like, even though I had the money to like, you know, live by myself, I still chose to live in a group house. Like we like sort of culturally consider that to be like, you know, well, of course, you know, like, you know, the more money you have, the more independent you can afford to be. And therefore you don't have a genuine mutual need that I feel like is one of the really important, like, core things that you need to build a robust community.
Yeah.
Right.
There's definitely like the upward ladder, the track. It's very anti-community, right? It's like it's like somewhere in like the middle of your life when like the time before you leave or after you leave college from to like when you get a house, you know, settle down in the house in the community that you're going to be in with like your partner for the rest of your life and have kids or whatever. Yeah. Like that time is like not, it's not supposed to be very community focused, like in terms of the track that like, you know, like the average like American wants you to, or the America wants you to be on, you know?
Yeah, I will say one of the things. So I actually had a therapist suggest to me, because I was feeling just kind of anxious about relationships and how I wanted to feel like I had this feeling that I was always doing so much for other people and I wasn't kind of receiving in the way that I didn't feel like I was getting anything back. And she said, well, how often are you asking for it? How are you accepting that kind of care? And I was like, never. I would never ask anyone to do anything that would inconvenience them in any way, because I can afford to drive myself, you know, to get an Uber to the airport. I can afford to pay a cat sitter. I can afford to have someone clean my house, like whatever it is. Like I never need anyone to do anything for me. But she suggested, like, why don't you try the next time you have to go to the airport, asking your friend to drop you off? And that was really hard for me to do. But even just that little shift has really strengthened a lot of my relationships. And I'm actually right now at this exact moment, I'm cat sitting for my friend.
Nice.
Because now we have a system where, like, she'll cat sit for me, I'll cat sit for her. We, you know, and it's not that we can't, like, afford to pay someone from Rover. It's that we are deepening our relationship and our connection through, like, giving in a particular way. But that was, like, definitely a shift that I had to make. And I'm still really not good at asking for help or asking for what I need or something that would be, that would benefit me. But it is something that I've been trying to work on a little bit more.
Asking for what you need is so clutch in, like, any situation, literally, like, any single one.
But the money thing, I feel like, makes it such a, like money complicates the dynamic so much, because then at the same time, like, you are going to have friends who are going to be like, wait, like, you want me to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and take you to the airport when an Uber is $30? Like, I know you could afford the $30, you know what I mean? Like, I feel right. like that yeah. part is also, yeah. like, we have so, like, little sort of cultural competency around talking about money and, like, figuring out how to navigate, like, you know, other people's boundaries around it, that piece, I feel like, makes it, like, adds a whole other layer of complication to something that's already hard.
I will say, though, Isabel, I think my assessment of that is, if the response to asking for help in a particular way is, can't you just afford to, like, that is the kind of friendship that is maybe not totally. The deep relationship that can serve this purpose.
Yeah.
And, like, I do think that money, like, talking about money is very complicated. And sometimes, like, if you have the money to treat your friend to dinner, you want to do that. And that can be kind of weird. I do think that if the response to a request for community care is, I will give you money to pay for it, like, maybe that's just not the kind of relationship that the kind of person who wants to be in that kind of relationship.
Yeah. So, pivoting a little back to the camp, I'd love to hear about whether or not you guys, like, was there programming, or were you all just, like, hanging out, vibing?
Yeah, there was programming. And we were actually very lucky. Another college friend had a wedding up in Vermont, and Stephanie and I got to go. And it was summer camp wedding. And this was, I don't know,
June,
when.
I think.
This was maybe 3 months before, 4 months before camp, something like that. And it was really useful to see how little structure people needed to enjoy each other's company when they knew each other to some extent. I think if you're totally anonymous, you probably want more structure. So we reined it in a little bit. Like, initially we had been thinking, oh, we'll plan, like, you know, 5 or 6 different blocks of time throughout the day, and there will be a specific activity, and people will sign up beforehand, so we know, you know, what we need. And we backed off of that a little bit and instead just had a few, like, general areas with some equipment and at least one or two people who promised us they would be there to help. So I think we had for the main day, Saturday, we had sort of an opening ceremony with some just, like, get to know you stuff. And then we broke into different groups. One was at the ball field, and that was, like, frisbee and volleyball and other field sports. We had a craft cabin that, you know, as with all of these things, we were just surprised at how much people brought without us asking or without us knowing to contribute to these. So a bunch of our friends brought all sorts of fun stuff for, like, collage and beads and all that. And then we had a game cabin with tabletop games, board games, puzzles, stuff like that. So that was the programming, basically, for our shortened. We're probably going to make camp a little bit longer next time, but in the day where we just had one main day for activities. And then later in the day, when it rained, everybody kind of went to the dining hall, and we had a talent show that night. So it's kind of a light touch, because people really, like, they needed no structure to just, like, start chatting with each other and connect. But I think it did give people an opportunity to break into smaller groups.
Yep. Yeah, we had. So we also had cabin units with identities. And so that was important to us, because we wanted people to feel like they were part of something and also be able to identify, like, we had people who didn't know, like, we had a couple people who knew nobody besides us. And then a lot of people only knew two or three people. So we had, you know, different cabin units, butterflies, cobras, dolphins. And so, you know, and they, everyone had a bandana, so you could identify someone in your group. And so that gives you kind of an in to be able to say like, oh, like we're going to, let's go do this thing, or I'm with you. We are the same. So that was really important. And I think the opening ceremony kind of gave people the ability to connect, even though I heard from so many people, they were really annoyed at having to do forced bonding, which we do not care. We will always make you do forced bonding.
I love
bonding.
That part.
But we do, I think for next time too, like when people were leaving, everyone was like so full of energy and they had this, like, I could see in their eyes, they're like, we want more of this. And so, you know, when people were leaving, they're like, we want to teach like dance lessons next time. We want to do like this thing or that thing. And they,
yeah,
a lot of people were like, we want more structure. We want lessons. We want crafts. We want like yoga. We want all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say people even after, I mean, they were always, everybody was saying next time, oh, the next, you know, we hadn't said anything about next time, but it was great to see that other people were thinking that. And yeah, a lot of people afterwards were like, oh, I wish you had like said, okay, we'll do beginner volleyball from 1 to 1:30 and then volleyball here, because they want to get a little bit of everything. And there were lots of, you know, Stephanie and I saw this, the language we were using beforehand was like an opportunity to celebrate the people in our community. It's like, if they want to share something that they really love. And there were versions of that that were spontaneous and planned. Like in the morning, we had Kayla do her workout class because she's like a group fitness instructor, not as like her primary job. It's just one of her many sort of side pursuits. But like that was a thing she was excited to bring. And then when it was raining, Julian,
Taylor and Kevin, led
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, right. So a group of people led like different dance lessons. And yeah, people have a lot that they want to share. And I think as they started feeling more comfortable, they were willing to, and people loved it. So more of that.
This reminds me a lot, unfortunately, of Bonnaroo, which I go to every single year. Just like in terms of like a, like, I don't know, it's the giant, like giant campsites. And I think like the vibe is very like high fives, warm, like ask your neighbor for a can opener kind of situation. There's like, and yeah, I don't know, a lot of this just like reminds me of like a lot of like the warm community energy you get from this, you know, ridiculous music festival in the middle of Tennessee.
Yeah, it is funny. I feel like these kinds of things do exist. I have never really been part of them. Like I've never been to Bonnaroo or other festivals like that. And so a little bit, it's like, you know, we don't have to build this ourselves, but like, I think Michael and I are both like, we have the best friends ever. They are, I mean, we love our friends. And I think really fortunate for both of us that like, I love Michael's friends and I think you love my friends. Yeah. And so like when we've been together for about 2 years and, I think just like getting to know each other's people has been like such a gift. And so I think the really cool thing for us is like being able to do this for our people. First of all, we want to, like, we love them. We want to give to them, but we also so want our friends to know each other. And so I think one of the things that we are hoping, to get out of this is like, potentially to do camp every year and have like people who come back and build additional connections and connect people within, like a lot of people, still like live in the area. And we, you know, we have other ways of getting together. Like Michael has a volleyball team that a lot of my friends and his friends play on this team. But yeah, I mean, I think like what we would really love is for like this community to not just exist in camp, but we do come together every year for this event. But that those relationships can kind of continue on throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a site? Like, are you going to like end up with like a 500 person camp at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the limit is too high. So we put in an application for May of 2024. And it's the bigger camp, the bigger, newer camp. So it's like 200 or so. So we would have accepted 150 people at our camp in September. We just didn't get enough registrations. But yeah, I mean, I think we'd love to scale up to as many people as want to be there as the camp can fit. I think we can do it. But it might be a little bit more of an endeavor. What do you think, Michael?
I think like one of the, I think, you know, we were initially
a little worried about like not having enough people, and we weren't sure when we got those numbers. Like, we were amazed because every single person on the list is like, oh my gosh, I'd be so excited for this person to be here. Like, even if we just had them, like, it would be great. And so that was a really good sign. But I think people didn't take us as seriously as we would have liked when we said, like, please invite your friends who you think would really like this. And since leaving, a bunch of people have reached out and like, oh my gosh, my friend would have loved this. Like, and we're hoping that this next time we get the opportunity to like broaden the tent and like meet these people who are one step away, who we almost definitely will just love and they'll be a part of the community. But now we have that critical mass who knows, like, this is about accepting each other and being with each other and being kind and like bringing the best out. And I think it'll be easy for anybody who's a little, who didn't go the first time to pick up on that and just like fit right in.
So, yeah.
You gotta have the pilot episode.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, exactly. The other thing about this is this is just kind of like a sidebar, but we had so many people who thought it was going to be a secret wedding, like a surprise wedding. Oh my God, wedding.
Really? That's so funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think we had several people who like really made a special effort to be there.
That's so
even
funny.
Though like none of my family was there, like Michael's sister was not, like it was never going to be a wedding.
That's so funny.
And so, I mean, eventually I think Logwheel will hopefully like we will do something very similar, or we will just have Logwheel be a wedding. But yeah, I think, and this kind of like my original idea for my vision of a wedding was basically this. So we basically, you know, we basically have done what I would hope to do for a wedding anyway. But yeah, I think that was the other thing. I don't know if that factored into anyone, like, but the Littlefields were absolutely convinced it was a surprise wedding. My friend Becca was convinced it was a surprise wedding. So I don't know whether, you know, they would invite more people if they thought it wouldn't be intruding on our special
so
day.
Funny. Wow.
So funny.
But we'll see. Yeah.
Next year, you have to put like an asterisk and be like, not a wedding.
Well, we thought about putting it in the literal FAQs on the website. Is this because a surprise we had so wedding? Many people ask.
No. Yeah. It is not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
So, Stephanie, Mike, first of all, thank you so much. It's been sick. We've had a great time. My closing question is going to be, what is one thing that you would do different at Camp Logwheel next year than you did?
Add another day. More time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to add another day. I think we're also going to potentially allow people to sign up for what they want to do. We wanted to kind of give assignments this first time to be very clear about what is expected. But I think we've got a group of people now that are really able and willing to jump in and do what's needed. And so I think we'll add another day. We'll allow people to say, I want to cook dinner, or I want to teach this lesson, or I want to facilitate this thing. And so I think we'll kind of allow people to even be more involved in the planning process next time.
I think also I made a lot of jokes during camp about forced socialization, and I had some elaborate ideas that I wasn't willing to go on, but I think this next time I'm going to get a lot more specific and aggressive about making particular people meet and do some little activity together.
That does sound like a nightmare for me.
But see, like one of the
I understand
one this. Of the keys to community building is cannot be
you might like it.
You might like it more than you think.
Lay down the law, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm down. I know. Like, I'm just saying it. It does sound like a nightmare, and I will do it. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, come to camp, and I'll pair you up with my mom, who also thinks that's a nightmare, and you guys will have a great time.
Cool. Okay. Well, we always give our guests time to like promo anything or pub anything. I don't know if you guys have anything you want to tell people to look at. If not, that's cool. But this is your time to do that.
Go ask people to support you and go give people a hug and tell them you want to be in community with them.
Nothing, like that's literally it. Nothing for us to promote. We have nothing ongoing. All we do is hang out with love each that. Other and our friends. Ask for what you want. Be part, be vulnerable, be intentional, be brave, and you know, ask for what you need.
Oh yeah. And one final thought. I feel like Stephanie, you and I have talked about this so much, and we didn't maybe say it explicitly. Like, we weren't sure everybody wanted community as much as we did. Everybody wants community a lot, like real bad. So like, if you're worried that, you know, you want it so much more and you're going to be the weird one, or like, you're going to, you know, make somebody uncomfortable, like odds are everybody else wants it and they'll show you that if you give them the opportunity, which is exactly what we saw at camp.
Amazing. Perfect note to end on. Cool. You can find us at I'm the Villain Pod. That's our Instagram. That's our Gmail. And that's our Twitter? What's the third thing I say? Twitter?
I don't know.
X? I don't know. Yeah.
Don't say X.
Otherwise, bye.
Thanks, friends. Bye.